Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the OIG Roundtable. I'm here with my two partners in crime, Matt Kachansky, our payment integrity director, retired UPIC Northeast, retired executive from HHS OIG. Your resume alone has got to be three pages just to explain like those two or three jobs. So I'm guessing you didn't also put on your resume that you worked at McDonald's and made McFlurries, right? I'm guessing that that didn't happen.
AMC Theaters.
There you go. All right. Well, and Wade McFall, retired assistant special agent in charge from the LA field office and now a manager on our SIU investigative team. Thank God Wade's resume is a little bit shorter. With Matt's resume being as long as it is, you'd think that he would have gotten the memo about wearing the
payment integrity shirt. Look at that.
It's okay. It's okay. It's not it's not your fault. It's just the way you were raised. We don't blame you. It's okay. So today we want to continue the conversation that we've been having with respect to SIU's ROI and some of the things, tools, tips, tricks, hints, all of that stuff that comes about from your payment integrity team. And when we're talking about ROI, I think we want to focus today about, you know, I was thinking the other day about this whole premise of be careful what you wish for, because you get these situations where SIUs oftentimes have these huge backlog of cases that are reactive. You know, for example, I was on yesterday with a client. They were talking about how they have 300 or 400 cases that are in a backlog, and those are reactive cases. That's not even coming from any data analytic tool that they have or anything proactive. It's strictly reactive. And it's like, well, then you go and you bring in some sort of a tool, an analytic tool of some sort, and you, before you know it, you've got hundreds more cases that you're not really even able to fully address. And so the first piece of this puzzle, which is important, is this ability to prioritize your cases when they come in. And Wade, I want to start with you because that's an important piece just from the vetting perspective. Forget even increases in ROI, and we'll get to that in a second, Matt, with you. But it really starts with being able to prioritize cases and ensure that the cases that are the top line most important, like the patient harm cases and things like that, going down to the least attractive cases to work, like these technical violations, things like no signature, you know, things of that sort. But the prioritization is what helps you. It's not, you know, from an ROI perspective, but also just investigative planning and resource allocation, right?
Yeah, and you hit the nail on the head. The top priority is probably always going to be if there's patient harm involved, but that's something that has to be addressed, and it has to be addressed in a, you know, quicker manner than some of these typical fraud cases. You know, they're kind of slow rolling. You have to do a records request, and that takes a while to get in. But when there's patient harm involved, that you have to act quickly on it to make sure that you can stop that. I think beyond patient harm, one of the main areas you're looking for is the like different levels of egregiousness. So you're looking at services that are just not rendered, as opposed to, you know, some billing errors or technical errors. So if it's services that are just flat out not being rendered, that's another high area that we have to look at. The other areas, you know, they kind of fall off after that, where you're getting into more technical violations and missing signatures and that type of thing. But if it's where the service is not actually being rendered, or if it's rendered and it's causing harm to patients, those are really the two big ones that you have to address immediately.
Yeah. I mean, the one that comes to mind for me is also the misrepresentation of services. That's almost as bad as services not rendered, because misrepresentation is the provider is actually performing a service, item, or procedure, may or may not be medically necessary, but wouldn't be a covered service. So they're misrepresenting it to be something that is covered. And I kind of put that in that high category as well, because obviously, you know, something's going on. You know, I think we see that a lot in cases that involve the amniotic grafts, the skin grafting, and things of that sort. Sometimes the ocular amniotic grafting that's done for people with certain types of eye infections and things along those lines, where or the injections, for example, that are not going to be covered for certain types of diagnoses, where that misrepresentation can really become an issue, particularly if it's something where it's not an FDA-approved procedure, for example, or CMS has identified it as being experimental, which there's plenty of those, and they'll just, you know, mask the code to make it look like it is a, a, a service that's being rendered. So that's an important piece, right? So, you know, in your SIU kind of categorization of things and in your claim vetting process for FWA is certainly identifying where you're going to prioritize cases, right? Obviously, patient harm is number one. There's no question about that. Everything's patient harm is number one. And then you've got to figure out from your SIU's perspective, what are the other most important cases that you're working on, you know, particularly when you get to things like hospice and home health, you know, those limited resources, should a, you know, should a hospice or home health case be investigated vigorously, you know, considering that there's a limited number of resources in those, particularly in the hospice space, right? When you've got people that have been on hospice for 2 and 3 years, and that's supposed to be end of life care. So yeah, I think each, you know, SIU has to kind of prioritize that, because that's going to help in determining and shaping, are you going to have a backlog of cases that you shouldn't have because you're prioritizing cases maybe in a way that's not consistent with what should be worked on. So Matt, that kind of gets to this, be careful what you wish for, because right, when you get a really good analytic tool that's just generating a ton of cases, increases in the use of technology and tools is going to be a good step, because it's going to help you narrow down the kind of cases you're looking at. But I think there's a misconception that having robust and great analytic tools is going to boost ROI, because you've got to, if you're going to have those tools, you need to be able to have the people to be able to work on those things, which is going to be an ROI killer, because you need people to do the work and you have to pay the people. So you've paid for a tool. Maybe you can't use the tool to its full extent because you have to throttle it, but then you've got that resource allocation. So, you know, you may want more cases, you may want more high dollar cases, but the ROI is going to be, you know, as you increase that, you're going to increase that cost.
Yeah. Yeah. You go to any healthcare fraud conference and it's usually, you know, 15 to 20 vendors there trying to sell you the latest and greatest in, you know, fraud, waste and abuse identifying software. And a lot of it is great. A lot of it does do what it pretends to do. It finds the anomalies, the oddities, the outliers, and can do that to the nth degree. And what we have found with some plans is they invest in that tool and they start to use it, and they get overwhelmed with the numbers of leads that are generated. And some of those tools, they do prioritize them for you, and you know, you can set up criteria for things like that. But still, it takes people, boots on the ground, to do that prioritization that Wade talked about. You know, how do you know it's abuse of a patient unless you're talking to the patients or getting some other information other than data that's leading you to that conclusion, or that it's services not rendered versus a technical issue? That's upfront work that's requiring people to do it. So if you're just investing on the one half with a tool, beware that it's actually may decrease your ROI, because your existing workforce who have, you know, full caseloads themselves that are bringing in ROI, they're now, most of their time is spent doing this upfront vetting and prioritizing and criteria finding for these new leads that just keep churning out of this tool, so that the maybe the settlement agreement or the overpayment letter or the medical review request that's been pending for a while in their existing workload sits, because they don't have the time to do it, because this thing just keeps churning out it's a treadmill of leads that come out. So if you're going to invest in the one, in the tool, you need to invest in the people that are going to be able to utilize that tool. And right, it's only through a slow advance. It's a bigger, you know, ROI. It's a bigger investment. But without doing that, you're not going to get the revenue at the other end of it.
Right. And wait, so I want to go back to you, because when we're talking about that, we're talking, there's that whole premise of the ramp up time and training and learning all of these things. And you've been on a number of our contracts here where you've had to get used to a bunch of different platforms, technology, tools, and things of that sort. And, you know, the biggest thing that I think has been an issue, and you've recognized this in the 4 years that you've been working with us, is that the more complicated these tools are to navigate and use, the more clicks that you have to do, the more surfing you need to do to get around it, that's an ROI killer. Because if you're spending a half an hour trying to click on the right thing and you've been clicking on the wrong thing and doing whatever, that's time in your day that's not spent being productive. And it's not to say that, like, investigate, this is the gulag, right? Investigators need to have their heads down for 8 hours just cranking out things. But there's that ramp up time. And then not only the ramp up time, but then keeping abreast of what that technology is doing. For example, is your tool so complicated they keep putting out patches and fixes and enhancements and things of that sort, that time, you can't get that time back, right? And so the more complicated, the more robust the tool is, oftentimes the more complicated the tool is.
Yeah, and I think a lot of times too, the tool has more bells and whistles than that are included with the tool that aren't really needed for what the SIU needs for it to do. And that's just kick out, leads that are you're able to follow up on and you're able to prioritize them. But it's like your iPhone. It's got, we probably use 5% of the capabilities of it. And a lot of times these tools have so many things that, you know, maybe you have one person who's like a data scientist on your, in your unit that can kind of take that and use it to its full capacity. But most of the investigators are not gonna, they need to have a series of tasks that they can do with the tool that will get them the lead that they can follow up on. And if you need somebody to kind of dig deeper and dive deeper into the capabilities of it, maybe you have to segregate one person who has that experience and right. Say, okay, we need you to be our, whatever the tool name is, you're our right. guide to do this. So, because you can't expect all of the various investigators to have that full deep knowledge of the tool itself. So you have to be able to use it for what the investigator's capability is, basically.
Right. And remember, you guys remember when we at OIG got, I think it was Analyst Notebook, I2 Analyst Notebook, and they, we got it. They invested a lot of money in getting that as a tool. I know in New York, they invested heavily in buying a very large printer for the big sheets of the things. And the problem is that there was no training. And it's not intuitive. It's not just, like go right to it. It's not intuitive. You have to get a little bit of training to learn how to use all the features of the tool. And it wound up being an albatross because nobody used it. And so we had an investment in technology and a printer and all of this other stuff. It wasn't until years later when we were able to bring in an analyst to the office who knew I2 and then using the features. But for years it sat. I know we're working right now with one of our partners on developing a case management tool for smaller plans that are out there. We've got one plan that, we're working with to develop that tool for them specifically, and then some other plans out there. And the one thing that we've heard by and large when we help them develop this case management tool is they don't need bells and whistles. They need the following 15 features. And, that's where their heads are. They don't need 500 clicks. They don't need, any of that stuff. And then that helps to create that efficiency. So Matt, I want to give you kind of as the last word as we wrap up is this general premise of an expectation of ROI coupled with the investment in technology. And people need to think in terms of that those two may be mutually exclusive, that purchasing an expensive data tool has the ability to produce a greater ROI if you're smart about how you're using that tool versus thinking that it is going to just be the wet blanket on the fire and put everything out and get you, where you need to be. That there's a correlation, but that people need to really think strongly about whether or not those two pieces of the puzzle could be mutually exclusive.
Right. They have to look at their overall budget. What, what can they afford to do to expand their investment? And then is it just in a tool or can they do a tool and people? If it's just in a tool, what kind of tool can they purchase that is going to give them the expanded workload that their current work, their teams can handle? So one of the things they will need to do is come up with some metrics, you know, how many leads per month? How many, you know, what is the time frame to do an investigation? What are, you know, how long should it be before a medical review is completed and things like that? So they can work out a workflow from leads that are generated by this new tool to resolution, and then get the tool that meets that capacity, provides them just what they need within that budget to provide those numbers of leads and those types of leads that their current workforce can handle.
Right. I mean, one of the things that we're doing here is, you know, we say to our clients, you know, for our SIU stuff, we say to them, well, how many leads a month do you want generated? And we're dealing with smaller plans who aren't saying, you know, we don't need 100 leads. They're regional Medicaid plans or whatever it may be, where they're saying, you know, 2 leads a month, 5 leads a month, or whatever it may be. And that's an important piece of that, because if, you know, when you have a really good analytic tool and there isn't that throttling, they're just generating leads that you'll never get to. And then you get to this whole discussion in leadership about, we're spending all this money on this tool, but we're not producing results from the tool. So why are we continuing to have this tool?
And it's, they look at the leads with potential losses versus the R, you know, the revenue at the end, it's not matching. Why is that? There must be a problem with the way you're operating your SIU.
And then it becomes, you're like a mouse on the wheel, because you're incessantly having a conversation about, we're paying X number of dollars a month for the subscription to use this analytic tool, and we're generating all of these leads, but, you know, when we hear about clients that have 300 and 400 and 500 cases in their backlog that are reactive, remember, data analytics is proactive. And so when you've got hundreds of reactive cases in your queue, how do you even address that? You know, is the issue isn't a better tool or a stronger tool, it's case management issues and getting all that stuff vetted. So it's an important piece, because you want to make sure that you're spending those SIU dollars appropriately. I mean, we see all the time now, plans are laying off SIU investigators. Those are sometimes, unfortunately, our space. They tend to be the first people to go when a plan is looking to do a cutback. And so the question becomes, you know, at that point, they're trying to boost ROI. How do you boost ROI on your fraud, waste, abuse market and still be able to maintain the ability to keep up with that work without increasing, you know, exponentially your costs? So it's an important piece. These conversations are happening almost every day with our clients in our consulting and advisory work. And I know they're happening on our SIU side, because you're dealing with them every day. So again, be careful what you wish for, because, you know, all the good things that are out there are going to result in collateral things that maybe you're not thinking of that you've got to consider, particularly if you've got very thin budgets on hiring and on training and things of that sort. So important topics as always. Good seeing you guys as always, Matt. Next week, hopefully you'll get the uniform retirement conversation. You might, you never know. So as always, we thank everybody for taking the time to spend a little bit of time with us here at the OIG Roundtable. And again, you can get everything on Spotify, on our YouTube channel. You can go to our newsletter and download it every week. Fridays, it comes to your mailbox. Sign up for the newsletter by going to our website, advisehealth.com. It's right there. Advise. And thanks again for joining us, and we'll see you on the next OIG Roundtable.
Thank you.
Thank you all.